"You still talking about that nutcake I locked up?" he asked, sucking candy. "That's right," I remembered. "That nutcake was one of your cases. So I guess I'll get sued, too." "Probably," I muttered, as I stood by my desk, shuffling through yesterday's telephone messages. "Why does everybody call when I'm not here?" "I'm kind of getting into being sued," Marino said. "Makes me feel special." "I just can't get used to you in uniform, Captain Marino," Rose said. "Should I salute?" "Don't turn me on, Rose." "I thought your shift didn't start until 3, I said. "Nice thing about me being sued is the city's gotta pay. Ha ha, screw 'em." "We'll see how ha ha it is when you end up paying one of these days and lose your truck and above-ground swimming pool. Or all those Christmas decorations and extra fuse boxes, God forbid," Rose told him, as I opened and shut my desk drawers. "Has anybody seen my pens?" I asked. "I don't have a single goddamn pen. Rose? Those Pilot rolling ball pens? I had at least a box of them on Friday. I know I did because I bought them myself last time I was at U-Crops. And I don't believe it. My Waterman's missing, too." "Don't say I didn't warn you about leaving anything valuable around here," Rose told me. "I gotta smoke," Marino said to me. "I've had it with these damn smoke-free buildings. All these dead people in your joint and the state's worried about smoking. What about all those formalin fumes? A few good whiffs of that will drop a horse." "Damn!" I shoved one drawer shut and yanked open another. "And guess what else? No Advil, no BC powders, and no Sudafed. Now I'm really getting angry. Coffee money, Cleta's portable phone, lunches, and now your pens and aspirin. I've gotten to where I take my pocketbook everywhere I go. The office has started calling whoever it is the body snatcher," Rose angrily said, "which I don't think is funny in the least." Marino walked over and put his arm around her. "Sweetheart, you can't blame a guy for wanting to snatch your body," he sweetly said in her ear. "I've been wanting to ever since I first laid eyes on you, way back when I had to teach the doc everything she knows." Rose demurely pecked his cheek and leaned her head against his shoulder. She looked defeated and suddenly very old. "I'm tired, Captain," Rose muttered.
"Me too, sweetheart. Me too."
I looked at my watch. "Rose, please tell everyone staff conference is going to be a few minutes late. Marino, let's talk." The smoking room was a corner in the bay where there were 2 chairs, a Coke machine, and a dirty, dented ash can that Marino and I put between us. Both of us lit up, and I felt the same old bite of shame. "Why are you here?" I asked. "Didn't you cause enough problems for yourself yesterday?"
"I was thinking about what Lucy said last night," Marino said. "About my current situation, you know. How it's like I'm hitting the bricks, out of service. Finished, Doc. I can't take it if you want to know the truth. I'm a detective. I've been one almost all my life. I can't do this uniform shit. I can't work for assholes like Diane Donkey Bray."
"That's why you took the field investigation exam last year," I reminded him. "You don't have to stay with the police department, Marino. Not with any police department. You've got more than enough years in to retire. You can make your own rules."
"No offense, Doc, but I don't want to work for you either," he said. "Not part-time or on a case basis or whatever."
The state had given me 2 slots for field investigators, and I had not filled either one of them yet. "The point is, you have options," I replied, touched by hurt I would not show. He was silent. Benton walked into my mind, and I saw his feelings in his eyes, and then he was gone. I felt the cooling shadow of Rose and feared the loss of Lucy. I thought of getting old and people vanishing from my life. "Don't quit on me, Marino," I told him. He didn't answer me right away, and when he did, his eyes blazed.
"Fuck 'em all, Doc," he said. "No one's telling me what to do. If I want to work a case, I'll goddamn work it."
He tapped an ash and seemed very pleased with himself. "I don't want you fired or demoted," I said.
"They can't demote me no lower than I am," he said with another lightning bolt of anger. They can't make me less than a captain, and there's no assignment worse than I got. And let them fire me. But guess what? They won't. And you want to know why? Because I could go to Henrico, Chesterfield, Hanover, you name it. You don't know how many times I've been asked to take over investigations in other departments. I remembered the unlit cigarette in my hand. A few of them have even wanted me to be chief. He hobbled further along his Pollyanna path. Don't fool yourself, I said, as menthol made its hit. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm doing this again. I'm not trying to fool anyone, he said, and I could feel his depression moving in like a low-pressure front. It's like I'm on the wrong planet. I don't know the Brays and Andersons of the world. Who are these women? Power gluttons. You're powerful. You're a hell of a lot more powerful than them or anybody I ever met, including most men, and you aren't like that. I don't feel very powerful these days. I couldn't even control my temper this morning on my own driveway in front of my niece and her girlfriend and probably a few neighbors. I blew out smoke, and I feel sick about it. Marino leaned forward in his chair. You and me are the only two people who give a flying fuck about that rotting body in there. He jerked his thumb toward the door leading into the morgue. I bet Anderson don't even show up this morning, he went on. One thing's for damn sure, she ain't gonna hang around watching you post him. The look on his face sent my heart out of rhythm. Marino was desperate. What he had done all his life was really all he had left, except for an ex-wife and an estranged son named Rocky. Marino was trapped in an abused body that most assuredly was going to pay him back one of these days. He had no money and awful taste in women. He was politically incorrect, slovenly, and foul-mouthed. Well, you're right about one thing, I said. You shouldn't be in uniform. In fact, you're rather much a disgrace to the department. What's that on your shirt anyway, mustard again? Your tie's too short. Let me see your socks. I bent over and peeked under the cuffs of his uniform pants. They don't match. One black, one navy, I said. Don't let me get you into trouble, Doc. I'm already in trouble, Marino, I said. 11. One of the more heartless aspects of my work was that unknown remains became the torso, or the trunk lady, or the Superman man. They were appellations that robbed the person of his identity and all he'd been or done on Earth as surely as his death had. I considered it a painful personal defeat when I could not bring about the identification of someone who came under my care. I packed bones in banker's boxes and stored them in the skeleton closet in hopes they might tell me who they were someday. I kept intact bodies or their parts in freezers for months and years and would not give them up to a pauper's grave until there was no more hope or space. We didn't have room enough to keep anyone forever. This morning's case had been christened the Container Man. He was in very grim shape, and I hoped I would not have to hold him long. When decomposition was this advanced, even refrigeration couldn't stop it. Sometimes I don't know how you stand it, Marino grumbled. We were in the changing room next to the morgue, and no locked door or concrete wall could completely block the smell. You don't have to be here, I reminded him. I wouldn't miss it for the world. We suited up in double gowns, gloves, sleeve protectors, shoe covers, surgical caps, and masks with shields. We didn't have air packs because I didn't believe in them, and I'd better never catch one of my doctors sneaking Vicks up his nose, although cops did it all the time. If a medical examiner can't handle the unpleasantries of the job, he should do something else. More to the point, odors are important. They have their own story to tell. A sweet smell might point at eth-chlorvinol, while chloral hydrate smells like pears. Both might make me wonder about an overdose of hypnotics, while a hint of garlic might point at arsenic. Phenols and nitrobenzene bring to mind ether and shoe polish, respectively, and ethylene glycol smells exactly like antifreeze because that's exactly what it is. Isolating potentially significant smells from the awful stench of dirty bodies and rotting flesh is rather much like archaeology. You focus on what you are there to find, and not on the miserable conditions around it.
The decomposed room, as we called it, was a miniature version of the autopsy suite. It had its own cooler and ventilation system and a single table I could roll up and attach to a big sink. Everything, including cabinets and doors, was stainless steel. Walls and the floors were coated with a non-absorbent acrylic that could withstand the most brutal washes with disinfectants and bleach. Automatic doors were opened by steel buttons that were big enough to push with elbows instead of hands. When the doors slid shut behind Marino and me, I was startled to find Anderson leaning against a countertop, the gurney bearing the pouched body parked in the middle of the floor. The body is evidence. I never left an investigator alone with an unexamined body, certainly not since the badly botched O.J. Simpson trial, when it became the vogue for everyone except the defendant to be impeached in court. "What are you doing here, and where's Chuck?" I asked Anderson. Chuck Ruffin was my morgue supervisor and should have been here some time ago inspecting surgical instruments, labeling test tubes, and making sure I had all of the necessary paperwork. "He let me in and went off somewhere."
"He let you in here and just left you? How long ago was that?"
"Maybe 20 minutes ago," Anderson replied. Her eyes were warily on Marino.
"Do I detect a little Vicks up the nose?" Marino sweetly inquired.
The petroleum jelly shone on Anderson's upper lip.
"See that industrial-sized deodorizer up there?"
Marino nodded his head to the special ventilation system in the ceiling.
"Guess what, Anderson? It ain't gonna do a goddamn bit of good when this bag's unzipped."
"I'm not planning on staying," she replied. That was obvious. She hadn't even put on a pair of surgical gloves.
"You shouldn't be in here at all without protective wear," I said to her.
"I just wanted to let you know I'll be out talking to witnesses and want you to page me when you have information on what happened to him," she said.
"What witnesses? Bray sending you over to Belgium?"
Marino asked, his breath fogging up his shield. I didn't believe for a minute that she had come into this unpleasant place to tell me anything. Anderson had shown up with some agenda other than this case. I looked at the dark red body pouch to see if it might have been disturbed in any way as cool fingers of paranoia touched my brain. I glanced up at the clock on the wall. It was almost 9.
"Call me," Anderson said to me as if it were an order.
The doors sucked shut in her wake. I picked up the intercom phone and buzzed Rose.
"Where the hell's Chuck?" I asked.
"God only knows," Rose said, making no attempt to hide the disdain she felt for the young man.
"Please find him and tell him to get here now," I said. "He's making me crazy. And make a note of this phone call, as usual. Document everything."
"I always do." "I'm going to fire him one of these days," I said to Marina when I hung up. "As soon as I get enough on him. He's lazy and completely irresponsible, and he didn't used to be."
"He's more lazy and irresponsible than he used to be," Marino replied.
"That guy ain't connecting the dots right, Doc. He's up to something. And just so you know, he's been trying to get on with the police department."
"Good," I said. "You guys can have him.
One of those wannabes who jacks off over uniforms, guns, and flashing lights," he said, as I began to unzip the pouch.
Marino's voice was losing its bluster. He was doing his best to be stoical.
"You all right?" I asked.
"Oh, yeah."
The stench slammed into us like a storm front.
"Shit,"
he complained as I opened the sheets shrouding the body.
"Goddamn fucking son of a bitch!"
There were times when a body was in such horrific shape, it became a surreal miasma of unnatural colors and textures and odors that could distort and disorient and drop someone to the floor. Marino fled to the counter, getting as far away from the gurney as he could, and it was all I could do not to laugh. He looked perfectly ridiculous in surgical garb. When he wore shoe covers, he tended to skate across the floor, and because the cap couldn't get much of a purchase on his balding head, it tended to pucker up like a cupcake paper. I gave him another 15 minutes before he snatched it off, as he always did. "He can't help the condition he's in," I reminded Marino. He was busy stuffing a Vicks inhaler up each nostril. Now that's a little hypocritical, I commented, as the doors slid open again and Chuck Ruffin walked in with X-rays. It's not a good idea to escort someone in here and just disappear, I let Ruffin know, with far more reserve than I felt. Especially a rookie detective. I didn't know she was a rookie, Ruffin replied.
What'd you think she was? Marino said. She's never been down here before and looks about 13. Damn sure is flat-chested. Not the way I like him, let me tell you. Ruffin's words swaggered. Lesbo alert!
He imitated a siren, flashing his hands like emergency lights. We don't leave unauthorized people alone with unexamined bodies. That includes cop, experienced or not. I wanted to fire him on the spot.
I know.
He tried to be cute. OJ and the planted leather glove again. Ruffin was a tall, slender young man with sleepy brown eyes and undisciplined blonde hair that seemed to grow in many different directions, giving him a tousled, just-out-of-bed look that women seemed to find irresistible. He could not charm me and no longer tried. What time did Detective Anderson show up this morning? I asked him. His answer was to go around, flipping on light boxes. They glowed blankly along the upper walls.
Sorry I'm late. I was on the phone. My wife's sick.
He had used his wife as an excuse so many times by now that she was chronically ill or a hypochondriac, had Munchausen's by proxy, or was almost dead.
I guess Renee decided not to stay, he said, referring to Anderson.
Renee? Marino interrupted him. Didn't know the two of you was close. Ruffin began slipping films out of their big manila envelopes. Chuck, what time did Anderson get here? I tried again.
To be exact, he thought for a moment. I guess she got here about 7:45.
After 8, I said.
Yep.
And you let her in the morgue when you knew everybody would be in staff meeting? I said as he slapped films on the light boxes. When you knew the morgue would be deserted? Paperwork, personal effects, and bodies all over the place?
She's never seen all of it, so I gave her the quick tour, he talked on.
Plus I was here, trying to catch up on counting pills. He referred to the endless supply of prescription drugs that came in with most of our cases. Ruffin had the tedious chore of counting pills and disposing of them down the sink.
Wow, look at that, he said.
X-rays of different angles of the skull showed metal sutures in the left side of the jaw. They were as vivid as the stitches in a baseball.
The container man's got a busted jaw, Ruffin said. That right there's enough to ID him, isn't it, Dr. Scarpetta?
If we can ever get hold of his old films, I replied.
That's always the big if, Ruffin said, and he was doing all he could to distract me because he knew he was in trouble.
I scanned the radio-opaque shadows and shapes of sinus and bone and saw no other fractures, no deformities or oddities, except an accessory cusp of the carabelli. All molars have 4 cusps or protrusions. This one had had 5.
What's a carabelli? Marino wanted to know.
Some person, I don't know who. I pointed out the tooth in question. Upper maxilla, lingual and mesial, or towards the tongue and forward.
I guess that's good, Marino said. Not that I have a friggin' clue what you just said.
An unusual feature, I said. Not to mention his sinus configuration, fractured jaw. We've got enough to ID him about 6 times if we find something pre-mortem for comparison.
We say that all the time, Doc, Marino reminded me. Hell, you've had people in here with glass eyes, artificial legs, plates in their heads, signet rings, braces on their teeth, you name it. And we still never figure out who the hell they are because they're never reported missing. Or maybe they were and the case got lost in space. Or else we couldn't find a single damn X-ray or medical record.
Dental restorations here and there, I said, pointing to several metal fillings that showed up brilliant white on the opaque shapes of 2 molars. Looks like he had pretty good dental care. Fingernails neatly trimmed. Let's get him on the table. We need to move along. He's only getting worse. 12. Eyes bulged frog-like, and the scalp and beard were sloughing off with the outer layer of darkening skin. His head lolled, and he leaked what little fluid was left in him as I grabbed him around the knees and Ruffin got him under the arms. We struggled to lift him onto the portable table as Marino steadied the gurney. "The whole point of these new tables," I gasped, "is so we don't have to do this." Not all removal services and funeral homes had caught on yet. They still clattered in with their stretchers and transferred the body to whatever old gurney they found instead of one of the new autopsy tables that we could roll right up to the sink. So far, my efforts to save our backs hadn't amounted to much.
"Yo, Chucky boy," Marino said. "I hear you want to sign on with us."
"Who says?" Ruffin was clearly startled and instantly on the defensive. The body thudded on stainless steel.
"That's the word on the street," Marino said.
Ruffin didn't reply as he hosed off the gurney. He mopped it dry with a towel, then covered it and a countertop with clean sheets while I took photographs.
"Well, let me just tell you," Marino said. "It ain't all it's cut out to be."
"Chuck," I said, "we need some more Polaroid film. Coming up."
"Reality's always a little different," Marino went on in his condescending tone. "It's driving around all night with nothing going on, bored out of your friggin' mind. It's being spat at, cussed, unappreciated, driving piece-of-shit cars while little assholes play politics and kiss ass and get nice offices and play golf with the brass."
Air blew, water drummed and flowed. I sketched the metal sutures and accessory cusp and wished the heaviness inside me would lift. Despite all I knew about how the body worked, I didn't understand, not really, how grief could begin in the brain and spread through the body like a systemic infection, eroding and throbbing, inflaming and numbing, and ultimately destroying careers and families, or in some sad cases, a person's physical life.
"Nice threads," Ruffin was saying. "Armani. Never seen it up close before."
"His crocodile shoes and belt alone probably cost $1,000, I said.
"No shit," Marino commented. "That's probably what killed him. His wife buys it for his birthday, he finds out what it cost and has a heart attack. You care if I light up in here, Doc?"
"Yes, I do. What about the temperature in Antwerp when the ship left? Did you ask Shaw about that?"
"Low of 49, high of 68, Marino answered. "Same weird warm weather everybody else has been having. May as well spend Christmas with Lucy in Miami if the weather stays like this. Either that or put up a palm tree in my living room."
The mention of Lucy's name squeezed my heart with a hard, cold hand. She'd always been difficult and complicated. Very few people knew her, even if they thought they did. Crouched behind her bunker of intelligence, overachievement, and risk-taking was a furious, wounded child who went after dragons the rest of us feared. She was terrified of abandonment, imagined or not. Lucy always did the rejecting first.
"You ever notice how most people don't seem to be dressed very nice when they die?" Chuck said. "Wonder why that is." "Look, I'll put on clean gloves and stand in the corner," Marino said. "I need a cigarette bad." "Except last spring, when those kids got killed on their way home from the prom," Chuck went on. "The guy's in this blue tux and comes in with the flower in his lapel."
The waistband of the jeans was wrinkled inside the belt. "Pants are too big in the waist," I said, sketching it on a form. "Maybe by a size or two. He may have been heavier at some point."
"Hard to tell what the hell size he was," Marino said. "Right now, he's got a gut bigger than mine."
"He's full of gas," I said.
"Too bad that's not your excuse."
Ruffin was getting bolder. 68 inches and weighs 100 pounds, meaning, when you consider fluid loss, he was probably 140, 150 in life, I calculated. An average-sized man who, as I just said, may have been heavier at some earlier point based on his clothing. He's got weird hair on his clothes. 6-7 inches long, very pale yellow. I turned the jeans' left pocket inside out and found more hair and a sterling silver cigar clipper and lighter. I set them on a clean sheet of white paper, careful not to ruin potential fingerprints. In the right pocket were 2 5-franc coins, an English pound, and a lot of folded foreign cash that I was not familiar with.
No wallet, no passport, no jewelry, I said. Definitely looks like robbery, Marino said. Except for the stuff in his pockets. That doesn't make much sense. You'd think if he was robbed, the person would have taken that, too. Chuck, have you called Dr. Boatwright yet? I asked. He was one of the odontologists or forensic dentists we routinely borrowed from the Medical College of Virginia. Just gonna do that. He peeled off his gloves and went to the phone. I heard him opening drawers and cabinets. You seen the phone sheet? He asked. You're the one who's supposed to keep up with things like that, I said testily. I'll be right back. Ruffin couldn't wait to disappear somewhere yet one more time. He trotted off, and Marino followed him with his eyes. Thalma's a bag of hammers, he said. I don't know what to do about him, I commented. Because he really isn't dumb, Marino. That's part of the problem. You tried asking him what the shit's going on? Like, is he having memory lapses, attention disorder or something? Maybe he hit his head on something, or has been playing with himself too much. I haven't asked him those things specifically. Don't forget last month when he lost a bullet down the sink, Doc. Then he acted like it was your fault, which was the bullshit of all time. I mean, I was standing right there. I was struggling with the dead man's wet, slimy jeans, trying to work them down his hips and thighs. You want to give me a hand? I asked. We carefully pulled the jeans over the knees and feet. We pulled off black briefs, socks, and the T-shirt, and I placed them on the sheet-covered gurney. I examined them carefully for tears or holes or any obvious trace evidence. I noted that the back of the trousers, especially the seat of them, was much dirtier than the front. The backs of the shoes were scuffed. Jeans, black briefs, and T-shirt are Armani and Versace. The briefs are inside out, I continued taking inventory. Shoes, belt, socks are Armani. See the dirt and scuffing? I pointed them out. Could be consistent with him being dragged from behind if someone had him under the arms. That's what I'm thinking, Marino said. Some 15 minutes later, the doors slid open and Ruffin walked in, a phone sheet in hand. He taped it up on a cabinet door. I miss anything? He cheerfully asked. We'll take a look at the clothes with the Lumalite, then let them dry and Trace can do their thing with them, I instructed Ruffin in an unfriendly tone. Let his other personal effects air dry, then bag them. He yanked on gloves. 10-4, he said with an edge. Looks like you're already studying to get into the academy, Marino picked on him some more. Good for you, kid. 13. I lost myself in what I was doing, my mind pulled into a body that was completely autolyzed and putrefied and hardly recognizable as human. Death had rendered this man defenseless, and bacteria had escaped from the gastrointestinal tract, invading as it pleased, fomenting, fermenting, and filling every space with gas. Bacteria broke down cell walls and turned the blood in veins and arteries a greenish black, making the entire circulatory system visible through the discolored skin like rivers and tributaries on a map. Areas of the body that had been covered by clothing were in much better shape than the head and hands. God, how would you like to run into him when you're skinny-dipping at night? Ruffin said, looking at the dead man. He can't help it, I said. And guess what, Chucky boy, Marino said. After you die someday, you're gonna look ugly as hell, too. Do we know exactly where the container was in the ship's hold? I asked Marino. A couple rows down. What about weather conditions during the 2 weeks it was out at sea? Mostly mild, averaging around 60 with a high of 70. Merry El Nino. People are doing their Christmas shopping in their friggin' shorts. So you're thinking maybe this guy died on board and someone stuck him inside the container? Ruffin asked. No, that ain't what I'm thinking, Chucky boy. The name's Chuck. Depends on who's talking to you. So here's the Daily Double, Chucky boy. If you got tons of containers stacked like sardines in a hold, tell me how you sneak a dead body into one, Marino said. No way you could even open the door. Plus the seal was intact. I pulled the surgical lamp close and collected fibers and debris, using forceps and a lens, or in some instances, swabs. Chuck, we need to check on how much formalin we've got, I said. It was low the other day. Or have you already taken care of that?
Not yet.
Don't inhale too many fumes, Marino said. You can see what it does to all those brains you haul over to MCV. Formalin was a diluted formaldehyde, a highly reactive chemical used to preserve or fix surgical sections or organs, or in anatomical donations, entire bodies. It killed tissue. It was extremely corrosive to respiratory passages, skin, and eyes.
I'll go check out the formalin, Ruffin said.
Not now you won't, I said. Not until we're done here. He pulled off the cap of a permanent magic marker. How about buzzing Cleta to see if Anderson left, I said. I don't want her wandering around somewhere.
I'll do it, Marino said.
I gotta admit, it still blows my mind a little to see chicks chasing after killers. Ruffin directed this at Marino. Back when you got started, they probably did nothing but check parking meters.
Marino went to the phone.
Take off your gloves, I called after him, because he always forgot, no matter how many clean hands signs I posted. I moved the lens slowly and stopped. The knees looked abraded and dirty, as if he had been kneeling on a rough, dirty surface without his pants on. I checked his elbows. They looked dirty and abraded, too, but it was hard to tell with certainty because his skin was in such bad shape. I dipped a cotton swab in sterile water as Marino hung up the phone. I heard him tear open another pair of gloves.
Anderson ain't here, he said.
Cleta said she left about a half hour ago.
So what do you think about women lifting weights? Ruffin asked Marino.
You see the muscles in Anderson's arms?
I used a 6-inch ruler as a scale and started taking photographs with a 35mm camera and a macro lens. I found more dirty areas on the underside of the arms and I swabbed them.
I'm wondering if it was a full moon when the ship left Antwerp, Marino said to me.
I guess if you want to live in a man's world, you got to be as strong as one, Ruffin went on.
Running water was relentless, and steel clanged against steel, and overhead lights allowed no shadows.
Well, it was a half moon last night, I said. Belgium's in the Western Hemisphere. The lunar cycle would be the same here.
So it could have been a full moon, Marino said.
I knew where he was going with this, and my silence told him to stay away from the subject of werewolves.
So what happened, Marino? The two of you arm wrestle over your job? Ruffin asked, cutting the twine around a bale of towels.
Marino's eyes were double barrels pointed at him.
And I guess we know who won, since she's the detective now and you're back in uniform, Ruffin said, smirking.
You talking to me?
You heard me. Ruffin slid open a glass cabinet door.
You know, it must be I'm getting old.
Marino snatched off his surgical cap and slammed it into the trash.
My hearing ain't what it used to be. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe you just pissed me off.
What do you think of those iron women on TV? What about women wrestlers? Ruffin kept going.
Shut the fuck up, Marino told him.
You're single, Marino. Would you go out with a woman like that?
Ruffin had always resented Marino, and now he had a chance to do something about it, or so he thought, because Ruffin's egocentric world turned on a very weak axis. In his dim way of seeing things, Marino was down and wounded. It was a good time to kick him around.
Question is, would a woman like that go out with you? Ruffin didn't have sense enough to run out of the room.
Or would any woman go out with you?
Marino walked up to him. He got so close to Ruffin they were face shield to face shield.
I got a few little words of advice for you, asshole, Marino said, fogging up the plastic protecting his dangerous face. Zip those sissy lips of yours before they kiss my fist. And put that tiny dick back in its holster before you hurt yourself with it.
Chuck's face turned scarlet. All this going on while the doors slid open and Niels Vander walked in carrying ink, a roller, and 10 print cards.
Straighten up, and I mean now, I ordered Marino and Ruffin, or I'm throwing both of you out of here.
Good morning, Vander said, as if it were.
His skin slipping badly, I told him. Just makes it easier. Vander was the section chief of the fingerprints and impression lab and wasn't bothered by much. It wasn't uncommon for him to shoo maggots away while he fingerprinted decomposed bodies, and he didn't flinch in burn cases when it was necessary to cut off the victim's fingers and carry them upstairs in a jar. I had known him since from the beginning of my time here, and he never seemed to get any older or change at all. He was still bald, tall, and gangly, and always lost in oversized lab coats that swirled and flapped around him as he hurried up and down halls.